Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have a lot to talk about. We are just days away from the NFL draft. We had the end of the NHL regular season. We had the end of the road for the Bulls. We have White Sox. We have Cubs. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. This team is in the playoffs, and they also just dropped today their game-worn autographed jersey auction. So I myself have a auction in for the Lucas Reichel jersey, game worn and autographed. So that is cool. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, game worn autographed jersey, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing?
Cannot complain. Things are pretty good.
Everything's coming up, Millhouse.
Yeah, except the weather. It was wonderful last week, and now it's like, oh, hey, you enjoy those 80-degree days and sunny. Here's gloomy and snow again.
Yeah, I know there are people that listen to the show that are not in the Chicagoland area, and last week we thought we were in the clear. It was in the 80s at one point, and this woke up this morning, and there is snow, accumulated snow. I mean, it wasn't a lot, but my neighbor's roof, so my bedroom is on the second floor, and when you walk to the stairwell, there's a window there that you can, it's directly looking at my neighbor's roof, and you couldn't see anything other than white roof, and that was not a pleasant way to wake up on a Monday morning.
No, and I think that it was one of those things where we saw in the forecast that it was coming, and we knew it was coming, and we were grumbling that it was coming, but then when it actually happened, we still acted surprised and angry, even though we should know better.
That's exactly what I said to my wife, but I'm the one that was going around and going, it's not going to be snow, it's just going to be rain. Nope, it was snow.
Yeah, and even though it was just the dusting and it all melted, it's when you've had a week of 70, 80 degree weather, it feels 10 times worse. And I can feel it in my sinuses too. My sinuses are dripping and, you know, kind of clogged again. So, you know, you're just getting used to that new, fresher, warm air. And then here's that cold air again with the gloominess. So hopefully this is absolutely it.
Yeah, basically Mother Nature looked me in the face today and was like, somebody's got a case of the Mundies.
No.
Where do you want to start today?
Well, there's plenty of places we could go, but I think it is significant to talk about the team that has just been eliminated from playoff contention. And that was kind of the big event last week, was this play-in tournament for the Bulls. And it was quite a weird journey in this play-in tournament, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The play-in tournament, spoiler alert, the Bulls didn't make it in. But it was like a small sample size of the regular season. You had the first game in Toronto against the Raptors, and the Bulls came out and looked fantastic. And you're like, oh, wow. All right, maybe we're going to get a run with the good Bulls. Oh, no. Then the bad Bulls flew down to Miami and just shit the bed.
Yeah, and you know what I think is, you can kind of break that down even further, is you saw the Zach LaVine of the regular season. Because what happened in game one against Toronto? The Bulls were down. They missed a lot of free throws, 18, I believe, a ridiculous amount. And the Bulls go out and say, okay, we're going to take advantage. And what does your max player do? He goes out and plays like a max player in the fourth quarter and helps lead them to victory. In addition to DeMar DeRozan's daughter screaming, you know, thanks for the assist there, obviously. But listen, that was a game where you say, hey, that was pretty fun. That was a nice, fun comeback. And they were able to overcome not only a 19-point deficit, but a really, really bad call on DeMar DeRozan in the final minutes of the game. You know which one I'm talking about, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And still bugged by that call. I heard it on the radio first, and they were pissed about it on the radio. And I was like, I have no gauge of how bad this is. But when I went home and watched the highlights, I was like, oh yeah, shitty call.
Yeah. But you know, you didn't crumble because of that. You still won the game, and it was, you knew who the Bulls were and you know what the stakes truly were, but you're like, okay, that's a fun win. We can at least enjoy that for a few nights before we have to head to Miami. And then you go to Miami. And I mean, you have a chance to win that game. You didn't play great in the first half, but you were, I would say the Bulls were very lucky to be within striking distance the way they played in the first half. You didn't feel that energy. You didn't feel that sense of urgency. And the second half, you rally and take the lead. You have a clear cut to winning this thing. And then everything just goes down the drain. And Zach LaVine, your max player, he showed up in Toronto, but he did not show up in Miami. Not at all. And when your season's on the line, you need your number one player to step up. And you didn't get that from Zach LaVine. You got it from Coby White. Coby White had a hell of a game in Miami. He hit those threes. He was looking good. He was scoring. Give a lot of props to Coby White, but LaVine didn't show. And when your big guy doesn't show in a do or die game, probably not going to win. Not in that situation.
Yeah. And what was kind of more disappointing than that game, and I'm going to be clear, is on one hand, I very much wanted the Bulls to win. The other hand, why? They're going to get smoked by Milwaukee.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's no chance of them being Milwaukee.
No.
And if somehow there was a miracle that happened and they beat Milwaukee, they're not running through this. Like, so I would rather have, I saw what happened in Miami. Even if they eked that game out, I you know, they're not doing anything. I would rather have them have that couple of percent chance of at Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I know I know your odds are low, but
it's even lower than beating the Bucks in the first round, honestly.
Yeah. You have a better shot of going into this draft lottery and getting Victor Wembanyama than you do of beating Milwaukee.
And it sounds crazy to say that, but in a 7-game series, like, listen, your shots at the number one pick are really, really small. So you would think, listen, every team's professional, they play the game, but again, the chances of beating Milwaukee were almost none. And even if you were to lose having to play Giannis in a couple of those games, look, the Bulls did beat Giannis in the regular season, but remember what happened towards the end of the season? Bulls lost to a Bucks team without Giannis.
Yeah, they had like half the team just not playing and the Bulls still lost.
And
so,
and listen, you could have, I think if the Bulls would have made it against the Bucks, they could have eked out a game, but you're not winning that series.
No. So I'd rather wait till the lottery drawing and fingers crossed that you get Victor Wembanyama.
Well, we spent a lot of last week talking about where do you go from here, and Arturis Karnišević talked to the media the day after they lost in the play-in tournament. That was Saturday around midday. And I mean, you heard things like, well, you know, we felt good because we played better in the second half. I think we're on the right track. But again, what happened in the second half? Sure, you had a little bit of a win streak when you got Pat Bev, but what happened? You lost the game to Giannis-less Milwaukee. You lost that game to the Atlanta Hawks. And you lost in the play-in tournament. I mean, I don't think you're really making much progress there.
Yeah, it's this that press conference was very disappointing, to be honest with you. And I don't think he really even wanted to do it. they love everybody and they want to bring everybody back. But let's be honest. They don't have, without going to the luxury tax, I don't think they can bring everybody back.
No. And remember, you're paying Lonzo Ball all that money. And yeah, he is likely not going to play again. So that, you know, that's the situation you have right there. And the big situation that I talked about last week that I'll bring up again is you're either going to lose Vooch for nothing or you're going to have to pay him money to bring him back. A guy who's in his 30s, no longer a spring chicken, and you don't know how long he's going to be able to play at even a solid level.
Yeah. And I here's the thing. What's the old saying? Don't throw good money after bad. You made a mistake on the Vooch trade. And at the time, I don't think any of us doubted it. I think we all believed in it, and it just didn't turn out the way we hoped.
Right. And you could even say, like, this past year, Vooch was fine. In my opinion, he was fine this year. He wasn't, you know, as irritatingly inconsistent as he was in his first full year as a Bull. But still, considering what you gave up to get him, you look at the overall body of work. Would I call it a complete bust of a trade? No. Would I call it disappointing? Yes. Even in the times he was good, because he did have some good games and some big moments, but he had plenty of moments where it was quite the opposite. And, you know, when you're trading for an all-star player like Vooch and you're giving up the capital you're giving up to get him, you know, you don't want fine or okay or inconsistent. You want consistently all-star level good. You just didn't always see that.
And, you know, you're going to hear from AK that essentially because of the Lonzo injury, the vision was never realized. And that's all part of it.
Yeah. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. Would have Lonzo Ball helped this team win a few more games? I think so. But are you going from like a play-in tournament to like a top three seed? No, you're not.
No, you're not. And I think that's the realization is, you know, you would have been firmly in the middle of this playoff teams. You know, you're not going to be top three. But you're not going to be in the play-in tournament.
Right, exactly. I mean, you're going to be down there with, you know, maybe you could be where Brooklyn is right now, like a six or a five seed somewhere around there. But you're not, with Lonzo Ball even, you're not better than Milwaukee. You're not better than Boston. You're not better than Philadelphia. You know that.
But I mean, you know, you'd be probably somewhere between Cleveland and New York.
So you're saying four or five?
Yeah, you're four or five.
I'm thinking five or six or four or five is somewhere in that range where you said, I think.
Yeah, you're not top three. You're not bottom three.
No.
So right in the middle of those. And I mean, what can you say then? You know, maybe you win a playoff series before you got to play somebody tough.
If you were a middle seed, if you were a four or five, I think you could win a playoff series with Lonzo Ball, but they'd probably just one.
Right. Before you got to play a real team.
Right. Because listen, if you were a six seed, you'd be playing Philadelphia. That would be a tough beat.
It would be a tough beat. The thing is, though, you're fully healthy. At least you feel like if that other team doesn't bring it or they stumble, you can take advantage. With this team, you feel like even if they stumble, you have to play a really complete game to beat them.
Right. I mean, you need everybody clicking at once because you know you're not going to play elite defense, so you're going to need Zach to score 30-plus points. You're going to need DeMar to score 20, 30 points. You're going to need Alex Caruso out there taking the ball away, making steals. You're going to need Vucevic playing like Vucevic and using to his strengths. You need all those things to work. And when you're playing in the playoffs, you know, it's you see bad teams beat good teams in the regular season all the time. We saw the Bulls beat Milwaukee twice. We saw them beat Boston twice. They did beat Joel Embiid once, finally this year. You saw them beat the Denver Nuggets in convincing fashion. So those things do happen, but the playoffs, there's really no room for error. And you know that if this Bulls team, even with Lonzo Ball, was playing any of the top three seeds, it would either be extremely hard to win or tough to win, but you would need everything to go right.
But instead, you made the lottery. And I think that's the right place to be, even if that's not where they were trying to be or where they wanted to be. Because where they sit, they have an 8.5% chance of a top four pick, which then they would be, they'd be allowed to keep their pick and not send it off to Orlando. And which is good because then you actually have room to build, and they've got a 1.8% chance of getting Victor Wembanyama. So not huge, but it's at least a shot. And with that eight, so was that like 1 in 11? Something around there, 1 out of 11 chance of you getting a top four pick. Not great, but not awful.
Not until Sean Hotman here sneaks into the lottery, takes all the ping pong balls, scratches out all the names, and sloppily writes Bulls over every single one.
And then just one of them, I write Marty Havlat Crockpot.
Boy, that's a bit we haven't pulled out in a while.
I just thought of it because I texted a friend about the that Ice Hogs game worn jersey thing, and he's like, did you bid on Reichel? And I said yes, and he goes, you should bid on Marty Havlat jersey. And I was just like, no, I'll bid on the Marty Havlat crockpot.
I'll never get the night we like made that up. I was laughing about that like until the next morning. Just so dumb, but it's so great. You'll replace like the thing they draw the ping pong balls with the Marty Havlat crockpot. Like, wait, what happened to it? I don't know. There's just this crockpot that says Marty Havlat on it, and when I open it, it makes like a noise.
Just somebody sit. They're all in a room for the draft lottery, and somebody flips a switch, and the crockpot just goes, and it spits out a ball, and they're like, okay, we have the Atlanta Hawks get the pick, and they go through every time. It's just like,
all right, Mr. Havlat, who's the third pick?
And then you just see Twitter trending, who is Marty Havlat? Why is he throwing up? But yeah, the Arturas press conference, I don't know. It just left me feeling a little empty. You know, they want to bring like everybody back. Yeah. You need more shooting. You love to bring back Vooch. I mean, it didn't tell you anything. I don't know where are you going to find this more shooting? Like, who are you going to get rid of to bring in more shooters?
I don't know.
I mean, honestly, I think you should not throw bad money after good and let Vooch walk. Trade DeMar. I love DeMar. I'll be sad to see him go, but you're not going to win a title with him.
No, and he's under one more year, so.
Yeah, and he's not going to re-sign with you probably unless you.
Probably not.
Unless you pony up a lot of money. I don't think he hates it here or anything, but, you know, he's coming towards the end of his time.
Yeah, he's in his mid-30s.
So you might as well try to get something for him, and you save that. He's not doesn't have the biggest contract, but it's also not cheap either. So you get that cap savings and, you know, whatever draft compensation you get. I think that's probably the way to do it. Then it leaves you with some more cap flexibility. And, you know, I love DeMar, but he's a mid-range shooter in a three-point league. And I think you need to replace him. I think you're smart to bring back Coby White.
I think so too. I bring him back with the way he played this year.
Yeah. I don't know what you do about your boy Ayo Dosunmu.
I don't know either. I mean, I'm a big fan of the kid, but
I have no ill will against him, but I don't know what you do with him.
I mean, I don't know if this is the right way to describe it. So say if this is accurate or not, but in his NBA career, he kind of just hit a wall.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, he came on strong to start his career and was surprising and gave the Bulls a big spark, and he just sort of has fizzled out after that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it almost feels like the league caught up to him.
So,
and I don't know if he's going to counter adjust or not.
So I don't know what you do to him, but Coby, I think you bring back. I think he's improved his game a lot. And I think if you let him walk, you're going to regret it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you get a guy that can score and shoot the three ball off the bench, that'd be great. The only issue is, though, is, you know, he wants to start. Yeah. I don't know if I don't know if he's ever going to get that opportunity, whether it's with the Bulls or not.
He's a guy, though, if you just let him walk, you lose out. I think
I don't want to just let him walk. Yeah, I really don't.
I think you have to tell him he's competing for a starting spot. And I also think you see if you can move AC, Alex Caruso.
Yeah, you see, at least shop and see what value you can get there. And I like Alex Caruso, but
yeah. Nothing I'm saying is personal. It's all how do you make the Bulls better? And I think part of it is, all right, you got to shed back and not rebuild, but retool. Is you're going to keep Zach. You hope P. Will gets better. You're going to try to bring back Coby. And then you're going to surround these guys with, some more talent, and at least then it gives you some cap room to work with.
Right. Yeah. And I know people who are upset with Zach are saying, get rid of Zach. You're not getting rid of Zach.
Yeah.
Nobody's taking that contract.
Yeah. You're not getting rid of him. And, so I haven't looked at free agency, and the NBA salary cap is the most confusing thing ever. So I'm not even going to pretend like I understand what, you know, exceptions that they have. And, you know, if they trade DeMar, how much salary they have to bring back. But
we've got plenty of time to kind of look at this, break it down, and see where we can legit go for solutions. I think that everything is still fresh off the end of the season. And, you know, they were, if you count the play-in tournament, you won 41 games. If you don't, you won 40. So you went 40 and 42. You were a 500 team. Frankly, I think right now it's pretty much who they are. So there's a lot of figuring out to do.
Yeah. And if you move, or if you let Vooch walk, and let's see, what is DeMar making for next year? So if you let Vooch walk, DeMar is going to make 28.6. Alex Caruso is making 9.5. You know, that right there is going to give you 40, 50, $60 million to work with if you move those three guys.
Got to spend it wisely, though, and you got to figure out how you're going to spend it. Fair. I mean, you know, part of it, too, is if you make deals, you could take on salary from guys you acquire because, you know, we're not talking about potentially just trading guys away for picks. You could be trading guys away to get other players.
Right. So I just hope Arturas is aggressive because he was very not aggressive in the off season. He was even less aggressive at the trade deadline. I think at this point, you know, you have to have some aggression to try to make this team better. You're just wasting years.
Well, I mean, go back to the beginning of last year's off season, going into this past season's. Your big acquisitions since then: Andre Drummond, Goran Dragic, who is gone, and yep. Patrick Beverley.
Patrick Beverley wasn't even off season. He was.
Over the time from the off season through the end of this season.
Yeah, Drummond did not live up to what you had hoped, even with the minimal hope that you had. Dragic gone, and Patrick Beverley was fine. You know, you'd hope that you could find an upgrade over him in the offseason, but again, if they bring him back, I wouldn't be mad.
I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back. I honestly wouldn't be. Oh, there was one other guy I forgot to mention, your first draft pick last year, who was in between the Bulls sitting on the bench and the Windy City Bulls.
Oh, Dalen Terry?
Yeah.
Dalen Terry.
Getting on that bus between out there by the Sears Center. Or what is it called now? I should know. I drive by it on my way to the office. I don't live far from there. I don't know. Whatever that building is called now, where they play out there, the Windy City Bulls, by the Dundee area and the United Center.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I hope that Arturas is ready to put in the work because, you know, I know he's in a position that's going to have him job security for 15 years, but, you know, I hope he feels the internal pressure to win games.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf has got to be a little unhappy because he didn't get his revenue from his two playoff games he was hoping for at home.
I needed that money. I needed it.
I was hoping to get my two home playoff games to get me more money.
I
need this pile of money before I die.
This is probably nothing what he sounds like too, but I don't know. You never hear him talk. He's never in the light. He's certainly in the topic of conversation in this city, but you never actually see or hear from him.
Have you ever seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2?
I've seen the first one.
Oh, the second one. Second one's dull. I mean, it is just crazy town, but there's like this, the grandpa who just, he's like a corpse, but somehow he's still alive. And they're like, hit her, grandpa. And the hammer in his hand. and he just drops it because he's just like, he's almost like Weekend at Bernie's. That's all I picture. That's what Jerry Reinsdorf is like. Like, we're gonna make that playoff money, Grandpa. He's like, he's just every time he breathes or talks, just dust comes out of that orifice.
maybe he's like,
he's like an unwrapped mummy.
Maybe he's like Jabba the Hutt. Hey, Mr. Reinsdorf, good news. We made the play-in tournament. There's a chance we could get our two playoff games at home. Ooka duka money. Oopa dupa Pedro Grafol. Oopa lupa Kenny Williams. Who's Kaputa? Rick Hahn.
And John Paxson is like a, oh my god, what's the guy that's like his Jabba's right hand dude? Yeah. That's John Paxson. The long robe, his long fingernails.
You got that band playing in his office.
Bib Fortuna. John Paxuna. You just have Kenny Williams in his office. Ozzy Guillen in the Slave Leia outfit with a chain, trying to yank the chain.
Kink, kink, kink.
Should we talk Hawks while we're talking end of season?
Yeah.
So the NHL season ended on Friday, and we now know where the tankathon landed, and the Blackhawks had this locked up, and they blew it with dog shit wins against the Penguins and forcing overtime against the Flyers. And the Blackhawks now have the third worst record / third best odds.
I could not believe the way Pittsburgh just, I mean, that more or less eliminated Pittsburgh. So now it was what, the first time in 17 years the Penguins won't be in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah. Isn't this the first time since they've had Crosby?
Yeah. That's something.
That I was like, oh, they're going to lose that because Pittsburgh has got to win. And nope.
We lose that game, we have the best odds.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's so frustrating that happened. And what's worse than that is not just, you know, it's one thing, the odds, but because you in the NHL, you only have the lottery for the first two picks. So the worst you can pick is two spots lower than where your ranking is. So if you had the worst odds or the worst record, the worst you can pick is third. And
right,
the Anaheim finished with 58 points. The Blackhawks finished with 59. So had they not beat the Penguins, they finished with the worst record.
Yep.
If they don't tie it up against the Flyers, they finish second with the second worst record.
Right.
And honestly, they're lucky they didn't win that game against the Flyers, because if that would have been the case, they would have been fourth.
Jonathan Toews almost had that breakaway goal. Almost had it in overtime. Now, I think what you just said is the most frustrating part. Because if you're number one, you have the best odds to get the number one overall pick, but it's not guaranteed. We've seen plenty of times the first overall team not actually get it. in terms of the order which they finished, but it's to the point of the Blackhawks could be picking outside the top three. That's not what you want. At the very most, you want them picking top three.
Yeah, let me break down. So had they lost to the Penguins in regulation, they would have better than a 1-4 chance of getting the number one overall pick. Instead, where they are is these are the odds. They have 11.5% chance of getting the number one overall pick, an 11.5% chance of getting the number two overall pick, a 7.4% chance of getting the number three overall pick, and a 40.7% chance of getting the number four overall pick, and a 28.8% chance of getting the fifth overall pick.
If we get the fifth, I'm going to be so pissed.
Oh, I'm going to be so pissed.
I'm going to be so pissed.
Because at that point, you're like, okay, it's not going to be like a... I mean, the person may turn out to be very good, but it's... there's four elite dudes in this draft. And you don't want to pick fifth.
No, you don't. I mean, listen, if we get the second or third pick, I think we can all be okay with that, even if it's not Connor Bedard.
Yeah, so to get one of the four dudes, you have a 71.7% chance of one of the first four picks.
Which are pretty solid odds.
Yeah.
Right? That's 70%. That's pretty good.
So that's, I mean, you're just praying for Bedard, though, because it is, it's...
that changes everything.
That really does. That changes the trajectory of everything that you're trying to do.
You have the rock, which you will build your new team on.
Yes. He will be playing here next year. And you've got somebody that you build this whole team around. And not only that, is you're getting him early enough in this rebuild that you can draft players that complement him. You're not trying to, on the fly, dump some other talent to build around him. Like, you have, it's a blank slate at this point.
Yes.
So you could build around him, find complementary talent around him.
There's another element to this too. If you have Connor Bedard and he's playing next year, people will be inclined to buy tickets to the United Center to see him play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if the team stinks, if the team... listen, no matter what happens, the Blackhawks are not going to be contenders next year. We all know that, right?
Right.
But if you have this exciting generational talent that is just coming up, with how many hockey fans there are now in this generation, with all the youth hockey, with the interest in the game that has been built up since the beginning of the Kane and Taze era, people will be inclined to come to the Blackhawks games to watch him play. They could say, you know what? We just lost 5-3, but two of those three Blackhawks goals were absolute amazing moves by Connor Bedard. People will watch that.
Absolutely. I mean, he's just super exciting.
People watched the games for the Bears to watch Justin Fields last year. A team that lost more games than any other team in the NFL. People were tuned into Justin Fields. It'll be a similar reaction with the Blackhawks. People will do that for Connor Bedard.
Connor Bedard immediately replaces Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews as the face of this franchise.
And instantly.
Adam Fantilli would probably be the second overall pick. And if you're the Blackhawks and you get the second pick, I think you're still pretty excited.
Yes, he's very, very good.
The Athletic was describing him as a more offensive-minded Jonathan Toews.
And again, to your point, a player like him, you can build around to what he is.
You know, the scary part is if they get outside the top two. Top two, easy. You know, number one, that is the easiest decision that probably anybody has made in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And two, probably pretty easy. After that, it gets a little more complicated. There's two good players. But you've got Matvei Michkov, who's a Russian player, who talent-wise is phenomenal. Like, he's probably the second best player in this draft. The problem is he is signed in the to the KHL until the 25-26 season, I think.
That's a long time.
I mean, it's through the 2025-2026 season. So you wouldn't see him until the start of the 2026-2027 season.
It's a long time.
It's a long time. That is the more of the time frame if you were to draft a young player further down and develop them when they would be ready to play in the NHL.
Well, and that's the whole thing, is you want to have control of some of these guys so you can develop them. And I know a lot of guys, you know, you draft them, they're under your rights, but they're playing, you know, college hockey, or they're playing in the OHL, you know, they're playing somewhere. But that's a long time to be overseas playing if you're trying to develop one of the future. I mean, we're not talking about a second or third round pick. We're talking about potentially a top four pick, one of the most important drafts this franchise is going to have in quite some time. So there's a lot to be thinking to do when it has to do with that kind of a thing.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen what's happened with him lately. His father went missing and was found murdered.
Oh my goodness.
And the rumors are that the mob that owns his KHL team, had him killed. But I'm not going to get into the speculation of all of this, but there's a lot of craziness going on there. And, I don't see a path for the Blackhawks to bring him to the NHL early. But he would be talent wise, the guy that you would want to bring in. So it's, the question is, and then the number four guy would be Leo Carlson, who is the defenseman. You know, he's an outstanding player, and in the, SHL, he was playing against grown men and looked really good. And he's easily a top four defenseman and super talented. But it's, do you go with the safer pick or the guy with the wild upside that, you know, you're not going to get for a while? And that's the scary part if you're the Blackhawks, is where do you go from there? And that's why I think getting one of the top two picks is so crucial. I mean, those are good players, but you know, there's a, you know, baggage there.
Hasn't this organization dealt with enough of that?
Yeah, just, you know what? Let us win this lottery. Give us this, our 11.5%, which should have been 25.5%, but it had to beat stupid Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully the odds will be in our favor.
Yeah, we've got a couple more weeks before. When is the draft lottery?
It's in May, I believe.
It's in definitely in May. It is in 3 weeks. 3 weeks from today, as we're recording this on Monday.
Yep.
So, that would be like the Monday after the NHL draft? Or is that?
Yeah.
So, lottery date. Oh, May. So it's a week after the draft. So we get the draft, and then we get a week to sit and talk about the Bears before we get the drawing.
Yep.
Let's see. I probably should have led this one with this one, but the Blackhawks made the announcement that they will not be re-signing Jonathan Toews, and his time as a Blackhawk has come to an end with the game against the Flyers. And honestly, if you're Jonathan Toews, you know, it seems that he probably, because if you're the Blackhawks, why would you even make that announcement if he tells you he's going to hang it up? Because if he tells you he's going to hang those skates up, then just let him go, let him retire and be like, he's going to retire and we wish him well, instead of putting out that press release, which makes me think that, hey, he's still undecided.
Yeah, I think he is undecided. And I there's a lot of opinions out there, and I get it. People have different perspectives and different feelings and everything, but the Blackhawks made a business decision and they were very transparent about it. They sat down and talked to him. I think they got the sense that he was still on the fence. The Blackhawks wanted to determine their future sooner than later. So instead of waiting around, they made their business decision.
And I agree. And it's the right decision. It's absolutely
It's 100% decision. The right decision. I don't know this idea of re-signing Jonathan Toews at this point. He's not himself anymore. He can barely stay on the ice. He's got problems up the wazoo with his health. What good is it going to do?
Right. And you know, my wish would have been that he got to go out and dictate his own terms and said, I'm hanging him up. Even if the Blackhawks all along were never going to, you know, re-sign him, I would have preferred that it was him that said, I'm the one hanging him up. I'm retiring as a Blackhawk. Would have made me have the warm and fuzzies. But, you know, it's not what happened. And the Blackhawks were very professional about it and said, hey, listen, we talked to him. We've been transparent with him. We want to be transparent with everybody. It's not the direction we're going to go in. And it's the right decision. You know, you can't live in the past. Jonathan Toews was great. He's no longer great. And
they haven't been a legit cup contender in 8 years. 2015 was 8 years ago. And I just don't understand the over nostalgia. Okay. Let me wind that back. I get the nostalgia. I get the feelings. I get all that. But it's the anger at Kyle Davidson I don't understand. We're trying to determine a path here. He's trying to focus 100% on the future.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you tell me, oh, hey, let's re-sign Patrick Kane.
That's different.
That's different because he's still playing at a high level. And I'll still say no, unless if you get Connor Bedard, then I go, oh, yeah, let's bring Patrick Kane back because that's going to be fun. You're going to see some points be scored. But if you're not, then, you know, why?
And for the record, I don't think Kane's coming back. I don't think they're bringing him back.
I don't think so either. But, you know, at least he was somebody that is still playing at a high level.
Yes. No, I 100% agree with you. That makes sense. What was it? 2 years ago, Toews missed the entire season.
Right.
He missed and this year he missed a lot of time.
Yep.
We didn't even know if he was going to play again after the last time he went out.
Yeah.
So I mean, again, I understand the feelings. It's not easy to accept, but I don't get why people are mad by this decision.
Right.
I just don't.
Be thankful you got the amount of years you got out of Jonathan Toews. And you go out and now you can get your Jonathan Taves jersey if you don't have one, and you can wear it forever because he's permanently, you know, in the pages of Blackhawks history, and you go on your merry way. But it's done. His time as a Blackhawk is done.
And look, this decision, I think, was mostly influenced by on ice performance and the path of the team, right? That's what it mostly is.
Oh, yeah.
I do think that there was part what made this easier for the organization to decide is that they were fine with the idea of clearing everything away from the past era for reasons that you damn well know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Like we still cannot just pretend that didn't happen.
Yes. Is they're trying to have a beach vacation.
Yes. They're trying to just clean the slate from any of that.
Did I say that way clear enough, but covertly enough?
I think so.
Yeah.
Everyone should be knowing what we're talking about.
Yeah. He's the last tie, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you know, it's hard to accept when the last tie of a dynasty, the center of the dynasty is gone, but there's that other element of it, knowing what we now know, where you're like, well, you get it. Not just from an on-ice perspective, but you know.
Yeah. So he's gone. The last remnants gone, other than ownership.
Right.
All ties cut. Clean slate.
Yep.
So when Connor Bedard walks in this building, none of that is hanging over his head.
Notice you said when.
I'm just going to get
into existence.
I have to, otherwise I'm going to be a sad panda.
Yeah, I'll be a sad panda. Well, and like you said, if Connor Bedard does come to the Hawks, nothing of the past matters. This is his team and this is his future. We should be looking forward. We should all be looking forward. Regardless of where they land in their first pick, they have a buttload of draft picks moving forward. And this is a crucial offseason to hit on the picks that you have, because you know that it is going to be a long, long path to getting better again. And you need to start off on a good foot by identifying the right guys, drafting the right guys, and then as we go along, developing the right guys. You know, I think that this team, this franchise right now, you can look and say, hey, you know what? We do have some guys already that are growing in stock down below, whether it's Lucas Reichel or Nazar, those guys that you already have, their stock is growing. Now you have the chance to draft your top core pieces, or at least some of them, because you have a lot of picks over the next 2 years. So this is going to be the most crucial part of this rebuild for Kyle Davidson, identifying the right guys. And when you get them here, and they're playing in your organization, develop them. This franchise over the past decade has been arguably the worst franchise in all of hockey at developing talent. The worst.
It has been. And, but I'm looking at the NHL draft, and damn, do the Blackhawks have a lot of draft picks this year and then next year, but a whole lot this year. There's, let's see. So there's what, 60 picks in the first two rounds?
Mm-hmm.
And the Blackhawks have 10% of those picks.
That's pretty good.
They have two first rounders and they have four second rounders this year.
And this is now what we have to focus on, is how we build this team from the ground up. We've torn down the old house and we dug the new foundation. Now we have to build the foundation and build up upwards. It's all about tomorrow.
Yeah, so you've got a ton of picks. And and you very well could get another, depending on what the Rangers do, you could be adding another first rounder.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh my God, that would be so nice.
And listen, in the NHL draft, you could find talent at, in multiple rounds.
Yeah.
And you're not just looking for the top superstars. You're looking for your future depth as well. You want to find your Brandon Saads, your Andrew Shaws, and those types of guys. And your Nicholas Jalmersons. You want your Taze, Canes, Keith Seabrooks, but you need your depth guys too. So the better you draft, the better you develop, the more of those guys you'll have. And what was one of the main reasons that those Blackhawks teams were able to win outside of your top core? It's the depth you had. It's the contributions you got, even from guys like Marcus Kruger, mm-hmm. or some of the veterans you brought in, like John Madden or Brent Sopel. So having that all in house is very, very important.
And as part of that development, you brought in one of your draft picks, Drew Commesso, who was your second round pick in 2020. And they just signed him to his entry level contract. So now bringing him into the organization, so that's adding to your goalie depth. He's probably going to split time with Jackson Staber in Rockford. But you know, who knows how long before you see him come up to play for the NHL team.
Yeah. I mean, you want to have upcoming depth again when it comes to developing goaltenders.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because
Be able to ride the next few years with veterans you bring in just because you're looking to fill a space, but you want to be able to be like, hey, listen, we're going to feel good this time about bringing up veteran goaltending, or bringing up young goaltending, I should say, for your long-term solutions.
Right. I mean, you've got to have a young guy who's going to be your rock, your anchor through your contention window.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're starting to build goalie depth along the way, which is good. you know, so you're going to have so many picks just to pad everywhere. And, you know, you hope you start to see guys hit, because, you know, even if they hit, you could start trading away depth. You know, if one guy, you're like, oh man, this is our goalie, this is our guy, and you have backup depth, it's not stopping you from trading that guy, you know, for somewhere where you have other needs. It's the Blackhawks are doing this the right way. And, you know, there's being a general manager in sports for a rebuild. There's, you know, two components, is the doing the tear down right and then doing the rebuild right. And Kyle Davidson has been doing the tear down perfect, absolutely perfect. And now the other part is you've got all this cap space. And he's been weaponizing that cap space, which I love. Mm-hmm. If you're not gonna sign guys to be competitive, weaponize it. Take on other contracts. Get as many picks as you can. And he's got all the picks you could possibly imagine, and he's got tons of cap space. It's what does he do with it now? Because it's easier to do the teardown than the rebuild, but he's been kicking ass on the teardown.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I wasn't happy with was the return of the DeBrincat trade, but Nothing you can do about that now.
Which DeBrincat, you know, he's not sure yet about signing a long-term deal. So, you know, obviously that means he wants to come back to Chicago, right? Right?
Sure. Sure.
To play with Patrick Kane and Connor Bedard.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Why don't you go lay down for a while?
Grandpa, you need to take your medicine.
Put some meatball sauce on it first.
Just rub some meatball sauce in it and walk it off. It'll be good.
Mix it in the crock pot.
All right, where do you want to go from here?
Okay, I think we have a very, very important day today that we have to bring up. One of our teams is now under a new president and CEO officially, and I think that is worth talking about.
Yes, today, we're recording this on Monday, and today is officially the first day of our new president and GM of the Chicago Bears, and Sweaty Teddy is... for some reason is still an advisor. He got the John Paxson role.
All I can hope is that all he's doing is helping with the Arlington Heights move.
What is it? What, we don't need him. I hope he's just picking up Ding Dong George's purple crayons and picking up the lunch order.
Organizing the crayons by color.
He's like, they're all purple. They're all purple, but I put them in the purple order.
That's not the right purple order.
He's sharp. He goes to the back of the purple crayon box with the sharpener built in. He's like, I make sure they're sharp for George. But not too sharp because he'll poke his eye out. He's sweating while he's doing it. I get the meat sweats.
He's got a chart that says not sharp enough, too sharp, and it's got the line through it.
I gotta start over.
Oh man, he breaks it in half and starts sharpening the half.
No, he sticks it in his armpit and it melts away. It gets soft because it's so hot under there.
Oh, come on. You just had to be gross.
It's Sweaty Teddy.
It's so gross.
But Kevin Warren started the job today in the gloomiest day possible. But
hey, it's a sign. It's bear weather, my friends.
You know, and I like the future we're looking at. And I would love to be on a fly on the wall and hear the conversations between Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren and you know, now that not only is, because last year I was impressed with what the Bears were able to do in the draft last year, and now they've replaced all of Ryan Pace's old scouts and things with Ryan Poles' guys, so you've got his guys in there now. So it's his whole staff. He's got a whole year in there. He's got a real president in there to bounce ideas off of and talk things through. And he's got his team. He knows this is his building. He knows this team inside and out. And he's got, what did last year? You have 6 picks going in. Now he's got 11, 10, or no, 10,
10,
10. So, you know, he's got nearly double, and including a high first rounder. So I'm excited for how this is starting to play out.
Yeah. And I was listening to 670 The Score earlier today, and they were talking about what the potential relationship could look like between Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles, because I think a lot of people want to know how involved would Kevin Warren get in football decisions. And I think that the most ideal approach, and what I'm hoping is that what it's going to be, is that, you know, the buck stops at Kevin Warren. He's there to sign off on the moves. He's there, you know, to approve everything. But, and, you know, you can bounce ideas off each other between Poles and Warren, but I don't think and hope Warren is not going to dictate how Ryan Poles, the football guy, does his job. What I think, and I totally agree with what Matt Spiegel and Dan Bernstein said on 6-7 The Score earlier today, is I think where a lot of the involvement from Kevin Warren gets in directly is on certain types of moves, whether it's franchise altering, like the big trade we saw earlier this year with Carolina, you know, a monumental, massive trade, or a good point that Dan Bernstein brought up is the example he used was, if you're talking about a guy like Jalen Carter, I do think that somebody with that type of baggage, I think that's where the president and CEO does step in and say, hey, listen, we got to have a lengthy discussion about this, you and I. I mean, that's fair, right?
Oh, it's absolutely fair, you know. And plus, it's when you're making a big decision, it's nice to have an adult, another adult, whether or not they have football input. It's almost like a consigliere to be like, hey, this is what I want to do. And he helps you think about points maybe you didn't consider. So trading that number one overall pick, or hell, trading that number nine pick is, you know, you're not, hey, this is your football decision, but let's talk this through. How is this going to impact us from a salary cap situation? Because, you know, he's going to have it understanding and input about the salary cap. How is this going to impact our salary cap? How, you know, it's another calming voice and another adult in the room.
That's it's Kevin Warren's. Kevin Warren will say, hey, listen, I need you to sell me on why you're going to do this.
Or even if it's just a, hey, you know what is, I feel better about it that this other guy in the room buys into it too.
Sure.
You know, right. even if Kevin Warren's always like, hey, listen, football decisions are your decisions. And he has somebody else to talk it over with.
Right.
Like, you know, for all of his faults, who is Ryan Pace talking to? George? Teddy?
Probably both, right?
And then like,
I mean, who the hell really knows?
Yeah, like what? Oh, hey, when he talked about when he traded up to draft Mitch, like he withheld it from so many people. Like, I get that you don't want leaks, but if you're that concerned with leaks in your building, then shame on you for having, you know, letting those leaks happen.
Figurative leaks or actual leaks in the Hallis Hall building?
It's probably both. And
you got George just putting buckets everywhere. Drip, drip, drip.
Yeah. So if you're Ryan Poles, you feel confident here. Hey, listen, I've got my assistant GM that I'm confident in. I've got Kevin Warren, and I've got guys that I can bounce these ideas off of what I want to do. Makes me feel more confident in the vision I have, or makes me consider points that maybe I didn't consider previously.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that you feel a lot better when you can say, hey, listen, we have a guy in charge who has sports background. He worked with the Vikings. He was the Big Ten commissioner. This isn't just some accountant. This isn't a guy whose expertise is tax auditing. You know, this is a guy with a sports background. So you're not talking sports with someone who's clueless on it. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, it's going to be important on draft day. I'll be curious to see if he's in the draft in the world on draft day.
Yeah.
But you know, on draft day, people are like, this is what I would do. And this is what I would do. But to be honest with you is everything, even though the draft is long, it's gotta be, you know, a situation where it's nerve wracking because if the board doesn't play out the way you hoped and watch it as a fan, be like, hey, here's the guys I want. And you start watching and you're like, uh-oh, this guy went off the board earlier than I thought, and this guy went off the board, and oh my God, that guy that I thought we could get in the third, he just went as a late first rounder. And you really start to get, you know, you could get rattled pretty quick, because if the guys start going off the board and the board doesn't look like you expected it to look like, that's when you start reaching on guys or panic picking. And, you know, if you identify a guy that you want to trade up for, you know, you having people that have been there before and not all new or in their positions, it's a calming influence, being like, hey, listen, we know all of these things that are happening. We know the board might break the wrong way and we're prepared for it. We've planned this out. We've mocked this out. This is what happens if it breaks really badly for us. Or, hey, we decided we want to trade up and we're getting pressed and we're running out of time on the clock, but we really want this guy. Are we going to bend over and get boned on a trade? You've talked it through, you're comfortable. And having those other guys in the room be like, you know, if you start to get desperate or anxious, they're there to be like, you got this, calm down, you got this.
Yeah, those are all good points. I mean, it's really important to be able to adapt to when things don't go in your first plan. You can't be spinning your wheels.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is so much less pressure, but I've done a lot of mock drafts with other people through electronic means. And sometimes you're like, oh man, this is working out perfect. Everything's coming up the way I hoped. And, you know, even when it plays out the way you hope, you're still going to miss out on guys that you really liked. But when it breaks bad, I've done a few mock drafts where you get to a point in like the second round and the best guys available are tight ends or a position that you already drafted in the first round. Or you get to the third and all that's the best players are running backs and linebackers. And you're like, I don't want to draft a running back in the third, but we don't need a linebacker. You know, those are the things where you start panicking. You're like, oh, okay, well, I'm drafting the 64th pick, but I'm taking a guy that I have, you know, ranked as like 80th on my board because the other guys are all positions I don't need, you know? So you got to be prepared for those. You got to be prepared because if you don't have a plan in place, and it's not just hey, you know what? I picked this guy, is you got to look at the draft a little bit. Is, you know, like if Jalen Carter falls to you, part of the conversation you have to have in your head is, or with your people is, you know, the character issues, how hard is he going to work when he's in the building, all those things. But then you also have to say is, you know, if we don't take him, who are we going to put in that three technique? Who are the other three techniques in this draft? Not only to where do we rank them, where do we think the other teams are going to rank them? Because if there's, you know, two other three techniques in this draft that, you're like, oh, I feel good about, and they're going to go, you either have to draft them way early or you're going to be late on them with your next pick. You have to factor that into your decision. Be like, you know what? I know an offensive lineman I'm going to like is going to be available in the second round, but a three technique is not. And you're like, I'm going to go for it. Or, you know, I feel confident we could trade up and get this other guy in the second round. But, you know, we're going to go with our number one offensive lineman. Those are things that have to factor in. It's having a plan is, you know, if that's how you're going to get the best available or the best draft, is making sure that no matter what happens, you're prepared for it.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better.
I was looking at a draft today, honestly, I was so annoyed by this draft, and I think, and it was one of the Bleacher Report or one of those sites that actually has people that are writing about the Bears, not just like a random person on Twitter. And in it, they were like, oh, the Bears, this point, are so lucky that Trent Simpson is available, and they have to run to the podium and be able to take it. And Trent Simpson, he's a linebacker for Clemson. He's a really good football player, but he's a linebacker. Why in the world would the Bears spend a first or a second or a third round pick on a linebacker?
Well, in the position they're in, you would think that they filled a lot of that linebacking already, so they'd want to address the bigger holes.
Yeah. You don't like, where's he going to play? Is so you've got your Mike and your Will already as your free agents. So you've got your Sam position, which, right now you're filling. But sure, could you upgrade? Obviously, but that Sam linebacker is only on the field like 10 or 15% of the time, maybe 20%. Like, so why would you spend a second or a third round draft pick on a guy to play, not even a quarter of the downs on defense? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
There are much bigger needs. I don't want them to reach too far, but there are definitely bigger needs.
Yeah. So I sat down and I was like, okay, here's a list of names. Who are the list of players that I would be comfortable picking at number 9? And
assuming they don't trade down.
Yeah. Assuming they don't.
So you're picking you're picking right at number 9.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm fine with trades. I'm just not one of those guys that's going to be like, hey, listen, I'm going to factor in a trade here, because that just adds so much more, such a bigger variable that you have no control over.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I'm saying if they stick at 9, here are the names of players that I would be comfortable picking. Will Anderson. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if he's available at 9, but if he is,
that's Ryan, a slam dunk.
Yeah, Ryan Poles, I want to see what 40 time he puts up sprinting to that phone to call that in. Jalen Carter. I'm nervous about him, but he's a guy that prior to all of the shenanigans in the pro day, and he was a guy that we were talking about picking at the number 1 pick. And if we can get him at number 9, and the rumors are is that the Bears are enamored with him, and they will not let him leave the build, or he'll be a Bear if he's available at 9. Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher. I would be very happy with if he was there. Paris Johnson Jr. He's probably the best tackle in the draft. Christian Gonzalez, the cornerback. I don't think cornerback is that high of a need, but if things don't play out like you expect, getting an elite cornerback that's a premium position, and you can't have enough cornerbacks.
No, especially when you have Jalen Johnson, who, as good as he is, let's face it, he's had trouble staying on the field with injury issues.
Yeah. And, who knows if he's going to sign a contract extension with the Bears. So, I would not be sad if they drafted Christian Gonzalez or Devin Witherspoon from Illinois. And then Miles Murphy, another edge rusher. And then the last two names on there is, these would be my absolutely, if they had to, Broderick Jones and Nolan Smith. So those are the names. If they stay at nine, I'm almost positive that's, you're going to see draft one of those guys.
If Will Anderson fell to us, I would probably just assume you did some Jedi mind tricks on all the other GMs in football.
No, no, that's not Will Anderson. That's Wes Anderson. And I start doing some awkward camera shots and wear a bow tie. Yeah, so those are the names. And here's the thing is, Bears fans act like, oh my God, we have holes here, we have holes there, and we have to draft to fill all these holes. You don't draft out of desperation. You draft out of strength. Pick the best players you can. There are still free agents left. Are they the top free agents? No, but there are plenty of free agents left. You know, if you need it, if you end up not getting a cornerback and you're like, yeah, we would like to add a veteran quarterback, Marcus Peters is still available. Eli Apple is still available. Rock Ya-Sin, who played under Flus, still available. Tackle. Taylor Lewan is still available. And if you sign him, you're going to have to kick Braxton Jones over to the right-hand side because Taylor Lewan only plays the left side. But you have, then you have two tackles. And you feel good about your guard, center, guard positions. You fill this spot. Edge rusher. If you don't get an edge rusher, Jadeveon Clowney is still out there. Carl Nassib, Leonard Floyd. There are still, I'm just saying, is if, would you rather have Travis Gibson run out there again or a flyer on Leonard Floyd again? I'm not saying it's what I want to do. It's just saying it's an option. If you don't get somebody in the draft, there are players out there.
I really hope they find an edge rusher in the draft. I really, really hope so.
Yes, it would be nice to get pressure on the quarterback.
They need to get pressure on the quarterback. They have to. They have to get more than what they had last year. They couldn't even breathe on the quarterback last year.
So the last thing I want to say with the Bears is Dane Brugler from The Athletic did his full 7-round mock draft. And I honestly think it plays out pretty well for the Bears the way his his draft goes. Is at number 9, they draft Jalen Carter from the defensive tackle from Georgia. With number 53, they take Matthew Bergeron, the offensive tackle from Syracuse. He's a good football player. I think he might end up being a guard, though. Just that's my one caveat with Matthew Bergeron, but he's a good football player. The 61 pick, Julius Brents, cornerback out of Kansas State. 64, Derek Hall, edge rusher out of Auburn. 103, wide receiver Xavier Hutchinson from Iowa State. The 133 pick, Luke Weipler, the center out of Ohio State. 136, Chase Brown, running back out of Illinois. 148, Kobe Turner, defensive tackle from Wake Forest. 218, Ronnie Hickman, safety out of Ohio State. And 258, Jose Ramirez, edge rusher out of Eastern Michigan. So it's actually a pretty solid draft as you get a center who's going to be a starting center. You get a running back who's going to be a bell cow type running back. You get your three technique that you can plug right in. You get a guy that you can try on the right-hand side, a tackle. He might end up being a guard, but you've got a guy that's a good football player. You add some more cornerback depth and some edge depth and a wide receiver that's good, but he's a traits guy, but you give him opportunity to make the squad. I think that's a pretty good draft.
Yeah. Chase Brown from Illinois would be pretty exciting. I know I'm a little biased there sounding it, but overall that sounds like pretty solid. Again, Carter makes me nervous, but the ceiling, if that were to work out, would be significant. But it comes with baggage. It comes with risk.
It's funny because you're in mid-April. You're like, oh, man, this Jalen Carter pick makes me nervous. But if 3 months ago you were like, the Bears are going to get Jalen Carter with the number 9 pick, you'd be like, no effing way. That's insane. No way. I don't believe you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, perspective changes quite a bit when things happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's, you know, it's exciting. We are like a week and a half away from this draft. And what's wild is the Bears have the number 9 pick. And we won't get to that pick until like an hour and a half into the draft.
Yeah, I know. I am so done with the mocks and the they'll do this, they'll do that. What will they do? What will they think? What will they look at? I just want it to happen already. Just bring me the draft.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired with it too. I just brought up the Dane Brugler one just because.
No, and I don't blame you for it.
Yeah, it's nice when people actually go through and draft, or they mock everything, and it's when guys are like, "This is what I would do," and you're just, you know, you're picking a guy that's probably going to be a first round pick with the end of the second round, and you're like, "That's just not realistic." Is somebody that this is their entire job and they're mocking this out, and you're like, okay, I'm looking at this, and you just see a way that it breaks for the Bears and turns out well. You know, I don't want to see a linebacker drafted in this draft because you just invested so much money to younger players. I don't want to see a linebacker drafted in, if it's one of your seventh round picks and you're drafting them to be a special teamer, fine. But I don't want in the first 5 rounds, I don't want a linebacker and I don't want a safety. I want guys that can come in and play right away. I want an offensive lineman. I want an edge rusher. I want a defensive lineman. I want a wide receiver because I want it. Dante Pettis just got re-signed today. And I want somebody to force him off this roster. And they say, you know what? Dante Pettis was arguably our best wide receiver last year, you know, considering that their other options all got injured. And he wasn't good enough to make this year's roster. That's what I want to see.
Yes.
I want to see those first 5 rounds. I want to see somebody that they realistically think can come in and try to win a starting position. And the way this draft broke out is you've got a guy day one is starting 3 technique. You've got a guy that is probably going to be a starter. If he's not a tackle, then you're going to kick him in the guard and you're going to move Tevin Jenkins to tackle. You've got a cornerback that's going to come in and compete for at least in your nickel package, not your dime. And an edge rusher who's going to be a rotational guy. And so like those, and a center that's going to be your long-term center, and a running back who's going to be a big time contributor. So you've got 5 rounds, 5 big time contributors. That's what has to happen in this draft.
Yep. Right on.
All right. Let's wrap this up with some baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to start with?
I'll leave that up to you.
Let's go Cubs. Let's go Cubs. Go
I
Cubs,
agree. Go. Let's go Cubs.
Go Cubs, go. So it's nice. Oof. My phone started playing a basketball game. So it's nice to see the West Coast teams, but I hate these late starts.
Oh, me too. I mean, the fact that I got to go back to work tomorrow and the Cubs A's game is just about to get underway and it's 8:40.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, it's bogus, but it's nice to see them play teams that you don't see as often. Like you, Cubs A's, it's not a matchup you see very often.
No. And I got to say, every time we play the A's or anytime I watch the A's, I'm reminded just how slick those uniforms they have are.
Oh, I know. I do like the A's uniforms. But yeah, I mean, the Cubs have been playing pretty good baseball.
It's pretty significant series out in LA.
Yeah, you're winning series. Like, sure, could you be doing a little better? And do you give up games that you probably should have won? Absolutely. But you're winning series. And that's what's important, because if you just keep winning series and winning series, that's how you make the playoffs.
Well, and I think go ahead.
You know, you win two out of three against Seattle. You win two out of three against the Dodgers, and it should have been a sweep of the Dodgers.
Man, that Saturday night loss stunk so bad.
Oh, yeah. You know, why are you pitching for Peralta? Why?
Well, yeah, I mean, that whole thing, and if he just would have swung a little bit later, that would have been a routine ground ball right to Nico. I mean, it was not far out of his reach.
But you move Peralta to first, get the bases loaded, and you get their 9-hitter on deck, who was 0-for-3 that game. You know, that's
wasn't probably Barnes hitless on the year going into that?
Possibly.
But no, knowing our luck, he would have gapped one. But I mean, but the thing is like, yeah, I mean, David Ross didn't do very good there, but one of the main issue that I had with that game, and I wasn't watching it. I just followed it a little bit because I had Orthodox Easter stuff. So I was just leaving after the eighth inning. But what really stunk about that game was they couldn't cash in on the opportunities to extend the lead because they had plenty of them.
The bats were just not hot that game. Your lone run was a Patrick Wisdom home run.
Right. And you know what? Overall, I liked what I've seen from the offense. It just happened to be that Saturday game. They weren't on it.
Right. They came out the Sunday game and they locked it down, got the win. Friday, the bats were out. I mean, when Yan Gomes has multiple home run game, you know you're about to kick some ass.
You had Yan Gomes multiple home runs. Say Suzuki came back and hit a home run. You had Ian Happ go 4-for-4 with a home run and two doubles. And I think I got to hand it to him. Ever since the first series of the season, Cody Bellinger has looked pretty solid at the plate. That home run he hit on Sunday, that was a bomb. I think that was one of the hardest hit balls he's had in the last few years.
Yeah, honestly, is if he can bump up the power numbers a little bit, like I am fine with his average and on base percentage. He's hitting the ball fine and he's fielding great. I mean, that home run by Hayward, great, fantastic.
It just looks really smooth out there. I mean, I said it last week or 2 weeks ago when I was sitting at the game behind home plate, looking straight just above field level to every fly ball that was hit into Cody Bellinger's range, which is quite a big range. You see how smoothly he's able to just read the ball, get to where the ball is, and make the catch. You know, there's a lot more at catching a fly ball than just seeing it and catching it. You have to go on the right route to get to where the ball is. And that's one thing you just never worry about with Cody Bellinger out there.
Yeah, he just looks smooth out there. When I went to the game on Monday, the 3-2 win against the walk-off win against Seattle.
Oh, that's so cool you were there.
Yeah, it was awesome. And the weather was perfect. It was my first Cubs game of the season and was sitting out in the bleachers in left field, but had this perfect view of everything that Bellinger was doing. And I was like, this is great. You know, he looks fantastic out there. And that game was great. Drew Smyly pitched fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then you get the walk-off and you're like, man, I'm feeling good here.
Yeah. And you know what? It was one of those games where you can say, hey, you were able to face adversity in, what was it, the top of the 10th when you loaded the bases with one out and Keegan Thompson was able to get out of it. You know, that's one thing where you're like, hey, you could have easily crumbled there and you were able to get out of it unscathed, setting up the win. Now, one thing I wanted to mention from those two games, and I want to get to the comeback in a minute, but I couldn't help but notice watching the game on TV just how different it looks under the new LED lighting at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. It's honestly, I didn't, you know, it's weird. So the Seattle game was an early evening game and, being there, I haven't been to a night game in a long time. So being there, I couldn't really tell the difference, but you could see the difference on TV.
Big time. I mean, the field was so much more evenly lit. It was much brighter. And, you know, you obviously had, you noticed the blinking lights at the end of the game.
Yeah. So it's, but it's nice to see the Cubs playing well. I mean, game two against Seattle, Wesneski did not have a good game.
No.
But the bats just came alive and picked him up. And you're like, okay, all right. You know, it's one thing to have your pitcher that you're counting on just have a shitty game. But when you can pick him up and be like, don't worry, bats got you. And get that win. That's huge.
That Nelson Velasquez grand slam was such a special moment. That, I mean, it felt like a postseason game watching that. And then to have Dansby Swanson go 4-for-4 before, you know, having to come out with the cramp after his wife just had surgery, and Velasquez didn't only hit the home run, he was on base a lot that game. And then you saw, you know, Trey Mancini kind of got things going with the 2-run shot to center. So just the fact that they saw themselves in a really early hole and were able to bounce back the way they did. And it's not like they slowly chipped away over 5 innings. I mean, they were, boom, right back in it so quickly. I mean, it was amazing how fast that all turned around.
Right. Steele has looked great pitching.
Looked awesome at Dodger Stadium the other night.
Fantastic. You've got Suzuki back. Jameson Taillon looked good against the Dodgers. Things are starting to look good. You're climbing back up those standings, and I like where Cubs are going here.
You got to beat Oakland. This worries me. Oakland is so bad, but how many times have we seen the Cubs struggle against players like the ones that are on Oakland?
Yeah, you've got to. You know, you've just got to, because that team is abysmal. They're not just bad, they're abysmal.
Yeah, I mean, the run differential is like minus 60-something. But how many times have we seen guys like 200 hitting Jace Peterson or Jesus Aguilar or just those guys just torture us over the years? Yeah, it's the definition of a trap series, and they can't fall into it.
Right. Because if they take care of business this series, they could be in first place in the division.
And at least be in like a good spot where you can say, hey, you know, we have taken care of business here, and now we have to face the Dodgers again, 4-game set, and then you got to face the Padres. You know, you don't want to bring yourself down because you lost some games to the A's. You don't want to do that.
This series is going to be important.
It is. You can't backpedal here. And I think that if the Cubs at the very minimum take 2 of 3, then you can head back home, and then, you know, you're at home for the next few series. But like I said, it's the Dodgers and the Padres, so it's no easy feat against those teams.
And, you know, in the not the major league level, the minor league level, you've got some of your stars, your minor league stars, future stars, hitting the shit out of the ball.
Matt Mervis, PCA, yep. Owen Casey, Christopher Morel.
Owen Casey is hitting a home run every other game, batting 345 with a 1300 OPS. Like, that guy is just absolutely crushing the baseball.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I would agree.
You know, so you got these young players that we're excited about that are starting to really look good. And that's going to force the issue at some point, because if somebody starts to struggle, you're going to be like, hey, we've got to bring this guy up and let him have major league at-bats.
Yeah, you have to realize at some point you got to work them in here. And I think that there's something to be said about the position the Cubs are in. You're in a great position now to find out what you have. You know, you're not just playing meaningless games, but you're not having to rely on everybody on your current major league roster being the season-long contributor that they need. I mean, because listen, Eric Hosmer is not going to be here by the end of the year. I would be beyond stunned if that was going to be the case. Luis Torrens is probably not going to be on the roster all season either. So there's going to be those opportunities that are going to open up for these young guys to come up and make an impact. And you want to compete this year, but you don't have a ton to lose. So now's the great time to find out what you have in some of these guys.
Right. Right. But you know who else is doing well in the this is last year's. Where's the 2023 Iowa Cubs stats?
They're mashing, I can tell you that. I was watching some of the Iowa Cubs game the other day on Marquee and looked, they just, everybody's hitting the crap out of the ball down there.
Yeah. You love to see it. You just really love to see it. You know, one guy who is not killing it that I'm very, very sad about is Brennan Davis.
Yep. Yep. I don't know. I think those injuries are, I don't want to fully give up on him yet, but I think the stock is really starting to fall. Unfortunately.
You called it. It makes me sad.
I did express concern. I did, but you know, we'll see how this season plays out.
I mean, if he doesn't this season, you start to write him off because he's 23. And if he, at a certain point, if he's not going to do it in the mid-20s, he's not going to do it.
Right. And I still think that those back injuries really, really killed it.
But one other thing that's former Cubs related, is I'm sure you've taken stock of how Wilson Contreras is doing.
Yes, I have. I have.
And I don't want to, enjoy somebody not doing well. But somebody that was so vocally speaking so poorly of the Cubs, it's kind of comeuppance.
I mean, there's a little, we can feel a little pettiness within us,
you know, and it's weird because you look, his walk rate's up, his strikeout rate is down. But he is just, you know, he's just not hitting the baseball. So right now he's batting, his slash line is 200, 286, 240.
Well, he's up to 245 now. Oh, is he? In the current game, he's got multiple hits.
Okay. Cause I'm looking at Fangraphs right now and his slugging is 240 and he's got a zero war.
It's 0.0.
Of course it's early.
Lutarski.
But, you know, he's a 31-year-old catcher who, you know, has had a series of injuries over the years.
Yeah, those pile up.
They pile up, and, you know, they're paying him a lot of money. And I like the way the Cubs catching is going.
Well, hopefully they can handle Wisniewski because he's already in some trouble.
Already?
He's already given up two hits.
Jesus.
Game and he's old. Just given up a run.
Oh, Jesus. What happened to Wisniewski from the spring training? That guy was killing
him. I don't get it. I don't get it.
All right, let's wrap this up talking a little White Sox. Oh, wait, one more thing. Is Ian Happ got an extension?
Yeah, that's kind of important.
Yeah, we got a Horner extension. We got a Happ extension. You know, this will have implications for how some of this outfield depth, you know, plays out and coming up. But I think it was important for the organization to give Happ an extension and Horner as well. You're rewarding the guys that you brought up. You're making them part of the new core and locking them up for, I mean, the Horner deal was very team friendly. And the Happ one was probably about what you expected of.
Well, it's nice because you have two very very reasonable extensions with two of these guys now in a realistic window. You're not committing long-term to these guys, but you have them locked down for the next 4 years. So you feel pretty good about that. You're getting what's going to be hopefully their prime years. And, you know, you kind of create yourself a little window here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, when Theo Epstein left and Jed Hoyer got promoted, I was a little nervous because I didn't like the way things ended with Theo and some of the decisions he made. And they happened in Boston too. When he left at the end of his Boston tenure, things just sort of went south. He got them the World Series and then it just sort of went south. And I was like, oh, this is playing out. Are we going to get the same is it going to be an extension with Jed Hoyer? And I really like the things Jed Hoyer has done.
Yeah. And you hope it continues because as fun as it's been, they're still not there yet.
No, but the things are looking up. On the other side of town, Tim Anderson is hurt and out for a couple of weeks already. And already struggled against Baltimore. It's, you know, you lost 2 or 3 to Baltimore. You lost 2 or 3 to Minnesota. You're the only thing keeping you from the bottom of the division is how bad your division is. And the White Sox just aren't playing very well.
That bullpen is really, really struggling.
Yeah, really struggling. Dylan Cease's last outing wasn't awful, but it was very un-Cease-like. The bats have been inconsistent. The bullpen has been brutal. And, this team is not winning baseball games.
I mean, the nice thing is for them is at least the starting pitching in recent days has looked overall better. I mean, you saw that after that really awful start for Michael Kopech, the last two have been improved. So if you can hang your hat on anything.
I mean, Saturday in Baltimore wasn't great.
It wasn't great, but
it was okay.
It wasn't disastrous.
It was okay. Clevinger pitched a great game. Giolito on Wednesday pitched a good game.
Yes, he did.
Lance Lynn had a meh game. Your starting pitching is fine. The bullpen's terrible, and the bats are just really inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is you're seeing some good hitting, great hitting from Jake Berger. He's been kind of carrying the team.
He has been great. You got a Oscar Colas walk-off.
Mm-hmm. And let's clarify, Jake Berger's great at the plate.
Oh, yeah.
At the plate.
And Lenin Sosa got a home run from him.
And that's about it. Andrew Vaughn's been hitting, but not hitting for power. He's getting on base, though. So there's that.
Yeah. It's not awful, but you expect a lot more power from him. His slugging is worse than Gavin Sheets. Gavin Sheets has been hitting fine, but he is a brutal fielder.
Yeah, that play against the Twins.
Jake Berger crushing it. Oscar Colas looking good. And I want to talk real quick. And Elvis Andrus is there. He's there having fun, enjoying his time.
He's just kind of there.
I rewatched the play against the Pirates where O'Neill Cruz got injured. And I saw it one time, and because somebody was like, oh, is it, you know, and I was like, it's not a dirty play. But I watched it, and what the hell was O'Neill Cruz doing? Like, it was all his fault that he got injured. Like, it was 100% his fault.
It was. I don't know if it's how Sebi Zavala reacted to it that sparked the whole thing, but you can't blame the White Sox for the injury. It was a really bad slide.
And you know what? I'm 100% on Sebi Zavala's reaction to it, because he almost got injured because the bad slide almost took his knee out. Like, you know, so he was in the right. I mean, in retrospect, it looks shitty that he yelled at a guy who's severely hurt himself, but I would be mad too, because he could have injured, you know, Zavala. I watched that replay 10 times, and there's a guy on Twitter who is a former professional baseball player that kind of broke it down too. And he caught something that I hadn't seen, but Oneil Cruz puts his arms up and he's trying to block the path to throw it home. And when he sees the ball get lobbed in, that's when he realizes, oh, hey, that's not working. And that's when it clicks in his brain, I've got to do something. But at that point, it's already too late to slide. So he's like, he hesitates. Then he starts to slide, but he's already too late in the process to slide. So he's just come barreling in. You know, and it's funny because he is a really fast guy. If he would have just gone in and slid normal and not trying to just, you know, play cutesy things and disrupt the throwing lane, I think he's safe. If he just runs hard slides, he's safe.
Yeah, I agree. It was just not a well-executed play at all.
You know, that's a teachable moment for all young players is commit and go hard. And it's probably safer for everybody. The catcher knows if he sees you running hard and he's like, oh, he's going to go slide. He knows what's going to happen. He knows what to expect. He's prepared for it. But when you have to put yourself in the position of, you know, am I going to slide? What am I going to do? That's when the catcher doesn't know what you're doing because you don't know what you're doing. And that's when people get injured. Luckily, it was just the guy that made the mistake that got injured and not both guys. You know, and I hate to see him, a young star, potential star player, get injured, but you know,
it was a freak thing. You can't blame the White Sox for the injury itself.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I get why the bench is cleared is their guy got injured. Their guy got injured. He got yelled at. We're coming out in the defense of our guy. But when cooler heads prevail and you all look at what happened, it was a young player made a bad mistake and a veteran player gets heated and says something. And I doubt he would have said it had he known the guy was injured. Just a bad play all around. And, you know, you hope Cruz comes back healthy after they play the Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You never want to see people get hurt,
and you don't want to see him play the Cubs because he clobbered them.
Yeah, and nobody wants to see Patrick Wisdom.
Is great.
He just homered again.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
Man,
it's 1-1 now. Wisdom just hit a no doubter.
He's got big boy power.
Yeah, I mean, that when he connects, I mean, I'll do a reference to somebody that I wasn't alive for seeing, but I've seen the footage of some of those Dave Kingman home runs.
Oh, is Dave Kingman when he hit that ball, it was those were big boy shots.
Yeah. And Patrick Wisdom has hit some absolute wallopers. I mean, how often do you watch Patrick Wisdom homer and you're like, oh, maybe, like, it's like when it leaves the bat, you're like, that's gone. Even the ones he hits low on a line, they're just hit so hard where you're like, okay, that's going.
Yeah. I was not alive for Cubs Dave Kingman, but in my early heyday of starting to watch baseball and collecting baseball cards, and when I started to absorb everything I could of baseball, Dave Kingman played for the A's, and you just watched him crush baseballs.
Wish I could have watched that, but now we got Patrick Wisdom, right?
Yeah. Except Dave Kingman was putting up 35 home runs.
Yeah, I mean,
40 home runs.
Wasn't he like one of the first like 40 plus home run players or 400 plus home run players to like not make the Hall of Fame? Because obviously you have the steroid guys, but they came afterwards. Because what? Dave Kingman's peak was like, what, the 70s, right?
Yeah, late 70s. Let's see. 400 home run guys that are not in the Hall of Fame. Mark Teixeira, Alfonso Soriano, Darrell Evans, Edwin Encarnacion. Andrew Jones, Juan Gonzalez, Carlos Beltran, Paul Konerko, Jason Giambi, Dave Kingman, Nelson Cruz, Adam Dunn, Jose Canseco, Carlos Delgado, Adrian Beltre, Miguel Cabrera, Gary Sheffield.
All after Dave Kingman.
Yeah, Manny Ramirez, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, A-Rod, Pujols, Bonds. And all of those, you could say, for the most part, why they're not in the Hall of Fame. Bonds, because he used steroids. Pujols, because he's not eligible yet. A-Rod, steroids. Sosa, steroids. McGwire, steroids. Palmeiro, steroids. Manny Ramirez, steroids. Gary Sheffield, nobody liked the cut of his jib. Miguel Cabrera, not eligible yet.
Will be.
He will be in the Hall of Fame. He's still playing.
With Pujols.
No, it'll be the year after because Pujols retired.
Well, I mean, not the same year, but I'm saying same with Pujols. Oh, yeah. Not eligible, will be in.
Yeah, Pujols will definitely be in.
Unanimous Hall of Famer.
Adrian Both Beltre probably will be in.
I think someday he deserves to be.
Carlos Delgado. Possibly. Probably. Canseco, steroids. Adam Dunn is the first guy where you're like, are you going to put Adam Dunn in the Hall of Fame?
No, he didn't play defense and he didn't hit. I mean, you know, I don't think it's as much as the average, but like, you know, people obviously at the time looked like, well, he didn't hit for the great average. He struck out a lot. He did get on base very, very well. And he hit the home runs. But I think one of the big things, if you look at like metrics, you're not, you know, one of the things that makes a lot of these Hall of Fame players, if you go by modern metrics, like WAR, you see their defensive contributions. Like if you are not a good defender, you really had to be a great hitter because, you know, to cancel out negative WAR.
Yeah. I mean, Adam Dunn hit a lot of home runs. He didn't get to that magical 500 number.
Right.
At that 500 number, then you just get to, damn, what do we got? We got to put him in, right? unless we just say he used steroids too. And then you'd be like, okay, we can, but Adam Dunn is that first guy on this list where you're just like, I can't put Adam Dunn in the Hall of Fame. So then it goes, well, do you put Nelson Cruz in?
Well, wasn't he suspended for PEDs?
I believe he was. Then Dave Kingman. And then Dave Kingman is right there with Paul Konerko and Jason Giambi. Sandwiched between in the home run leaders with Vlad Guerrero and Andre Dawson, who are both in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Andre Dawson, even though he didn't hit as many home runs, is clearly a better baseball player than Dave Kingman, Jason Giambi, and Paul Konerko.
Oh, I mean, he had that defense and that arm out in right field was as good as anybody's.
Arguably the best arm in all time. Arguably.
Yeah, it's up there. It's definitely up there.
And he was a Before those knee injuries, you know, Cubs fans, we saw him when he ran straight legged. But if you watch him with the Expos, you're like, oh my God, that guy had wheels.
Yeah. I mean, because he was with the Expos for a long time before he came to Chicago.
Right. But yeah, Dave Kingman, Adam Dunn, those are the guys who are just like, up. They could hit a lot of home runs. We're not putting them in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And Andrew Jones will be in the Hall of Fame. This rest of this list here Konerko, Jason Giambi will not. Paul Konerko will not. Dave Kingman will not. Carlos Beltran, I think he probably will. Isn't his first eligibility year next year or this year?
Will that association with the Astros hurt him?
I don't think so. Maybe. Cheating isn't as bad as steroids. Stealing signs, and they don't look, it's not looked down upon. I think Beltran will get in the Hall of Fame. Maybe not first ballot. Juan Gonzalez, probably not, but I will tell you, as a fan growing up in that era, man, was Juan Gonzalez popular. Andrew Jones will be. I will put money on it. And then
Andrew Jones's defense was,
he hit 434 really home runs, and he was one of the best fielding outfielders in a generation.
He really was an amazing fielder.
Yeah. And then that, Cal Ripken, that rounds out your top 50 home run hitters of all time.
There you go.
Yeah. Was there anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, I've said my piece.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, Swirsky Sports, Twitter at Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.